numerous countries in the region and beyond are involved.
I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Escuchando in Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in occupied Washington. El Distrito Colombia here on this Friday, November 14th, 2025. We're also heard on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show. That is at LMC underscore show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on Colombia as we continue our special collaboration with the Colombia Human Rights Committee and Global Witness to give a platform to human rights activists to assist progress, if any, under the Gustavo Petro administration. And so joining us on the show today is Astrid Torres, who's the director of the Somos Defensores program based in Colombia. She joins us for the first time here in Washington. Welcome to the show, Astrid Torres.
Muchísimas gracias por la invitación a este espacio.
Thank you so much for inviting me to join you here.
Also joining us on the show today is Pilar Castillo, who's the director of Asociación Minga, also based in Colombia. Also joining us in Washington for the first time. Welcome to the show, Pilar Castillo.
Bueno, un saludo a todos que nos escuchan. Muchas gracias por la invitación.
Greetings to all who are listening to us, and thanks so much for the invitation.
Last but not least is Charlie Roberts, who's from the Colombia Human Rights Committee, who will be interpreting this program for today. Welcome, and thank you again for your help, Charlie Roberts.
Of course. It's a pleasure, as always.
So let's start right off the bat with Astrid first by explaining to us what is your organization, Somos Defensores, and what brings you to the U.S. at this time as it pertains to Colombian human rights.
El programa Somos Defensores es un espacio de la sociedad.
The Somos Defensores program is a civil society space that was founded 25 years ago to defend the right to defend rights and to seek protection for leaders in Colombia. And we are here in the United States this month because of the need to engage in conversations with the international community, academia, and civil society about the situation of human rights defenders in Colombia, the recent decisions that have been made by the UN Security Council to limit the mandate of the mission that monitors the peace process, which includes an ethnic chapter and transitional justice, leaving these out of the scope of observation, and the impacts on the indigenous and Afro-Colombian populations and victims of the Colombian conflict. We've also brought messages on the importance of respecting the Human Rights Charter after recent decisions by the U.S. government in international waters of the Caribbean and the Pacific in Latin America.
Pilar Castillo, the same question to you. Tell us about your organization, Organización Minga, and what brings you to the U.S. at this time.
Bueno, Minga es una ONG, organización no gubernamental.
Minga is an NGO, a non-governmental organization. It is not part of the Colombian government. It's an organization made up of people from Colombian civil society. We have been working for more than 30 years to defend and protect human rights. We work in different areas of Colombia, including the Amazon region, in the departments of Cauca and Nariño, in places that are quite far from the main cities, areas that have been plagued by a great deal of conflict. We're focused on defending human rights providing advisory services to victims of serious human rights violations, as well as helping to train peasant organizations as well as indigenous peoples. We're here because of the need to have a greater relationship with organizations of U.S. civil society. We believe that at this time, the situation in Colombia and internationally demands a greater sisterhood among our peoples so as to help reduce hate speech and war speech, which has been abounding, and to the contrary, make it possible for all society and all of humanity to join in a message for peace and for the respect for and the independence of every people, every nation, and particularly respect at all times and in all places for human rights.
So I want to turn my attention to Astrid here, because in September or October of last year, if I'm not mistaken, you were quoted in several news articles and publications with regards to the plight or the challenges the environmental activists face. You were quoted, and I'm summarizing here, that environmental activists are murdered in Colombia almost every 2 days on average. I'm curious to get your assessment on conditions with regards to environmental activists 1 year later.
In Colombia, indeed, those who defend land, territory, the environment, and human rights in general are subject to attacks all the time, and their lives are at risk. Last year, from the Somos Defensores program, we were able to document approximately 157 assassinations. And from January to June of 25, we've documented 78 more assassinations, reflecting a 20% increase this year over the first half of 2024. In particular, attacks against environmental activists are very worrisome because in Colombia, environmentalists include members of indigenous communities, Afro-Colombian communities, and peasant communities, as well as those who define themselves as environmental leaders. Basically, we have pointed out that the situation of defenders has not improved in Colombia. We recognize in the government of Gustavo Petro, a government that knows about the crisis that is being suffered by those of us who defend the rights, nature, the environment, and the human rights. The government has opened up a dialogue with civil society organizations in order to determine the public policy for guarantees and to talk about issues of protection, but specifically, the situation has not improved. And in 2025 in particular has been a very bloody year for human rights defenders as well as for environmental leaders. And that is why we note that according to figures, every 2 days in Colombia on average, a defender is assassinated, not only of land and territory, but also human rights defenders. But apart from the assassinations, we've also been able, we have noted attacks, forced disappearances, kidnappings, and other types of violence, in particular against women defenders of the environment, land, and territory. In particular, it's the indigenous peoples in the Cauca who have borne the brunt of deadly violence and socio-political violence by the illegal armed actors. There are major challenges there for the remaining of the Petro administration when it comes to protecting those who defend the land and the territories. And in particular, according to Global Witness, in 2024, it highlighted Colombia once again as the country where those who defend the environment, land, and territory are assassinated more than in any other country in the world. And this despite the fact that we have many laws, more than 43 laws, that seek to defend or to protect those who defend rights. But these laws are insufficient if the state as a whole doesn't act to provide protection and particularly to prevent the risks that the communities have already warned of, and also by the Office of the Human Rights Ombudsperson. That office, over the last 2 years, has issued more than 90 early warnings saying that defenders and communities need to be defended in Colombia from attacks by the illegal armed actors, but also by others, such as companies or other private interests.
You know, next year will mark the 20th anniversary of the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW. And in that time, we have done a lot of shows with regards to human rights in Colombia. And the province of Cauca keeps coming up over and over and over again, not only because of its natural resources, not only because of the harassments that activists have faced over the years there, but the fact that there is a significant Afro-Colombian community in that region of Colombia. So it's quite astounding. This is more of a statement probably than a question, but it is quite astounding that after 20 years, this community is still bearing the brunt of harassment, torture, disappearances, and murder, like you just mentioned. And I just want to bring that up just as an example, perhaps saying if the province of Cauca is just a microcosm to what's happening in other provinces throughout the country, especially when it comes to indigenous and Afro-Colombians facing most of what you just described, torture, kidnappings, and murders.
Sí, Cauca es, digamos, un territorio en este momento en materia de personas defensoras.
Yes, Cauca is the part of the country that has the largest number of attacks reported against defenders, but it is also the same situation is experienced in other areas where there are indigenous communities and Afro-Colombian communities. This includes Guaviare, Caquetá, Putumayo, also Antioquia, El Chocó. All of these are areas where there's a large presence of illegal armed actors pressuring the communities. They don't acknowledge the indigenous or Afro-Colombian authorities or their life plans, and this has brought about the very serious humanitarian crisis in these communities, and it has a direct impact on the right to defend rights. When the indigenous and Afro-Colombian authorities are not respected, when the spiritual authorities are not respected, that brings about a direct impact on the communities, because the idea is to break down the collective community processes whose function is to preserve life of these communities, to preserve nature, but also to have authorities who seek to care for life in its highest expression. That is something else that the illegal armed actors seek to attack. That is to say, these authorities and the indigenous guard in the Cauca, but also in any territory where there are organized indigenous Afro-Colombian and peasant communities.
The province of Putumayo will come back again during the course of this conversation. But before we get to that, last month we had the pleasure of speaking with human rights activist Alberto Yepes, again in collaboration with the Colombia Human Rights Committee. We mentioned Colombian President Gustavo Petro a lot during that conversation. But on the issue of environmental activism, I would like to point to his vice president, Francia Marquez, the first Afro-Colombian vice president in the country's history. She began her career as an environmental activist opposing the eviction of Afro-Colombians from their lands for mining purposes. She even won the Goldman Environmental Prize in 2018. This is the same prize that the late Honduran indigenous activist Berta Cáceres won in Honduras several years ago. Does having someone like this in high office help environmental activists in any way? Has it had any impact at all, at the very least, in moving your work in a more positive direction? And I direct this question to both Astrid and Pilar.
Consideramos que fue muy importante que Francia Márquez.
We think that it's very important that Francia Márquez has reached this very important position of vice president. Also, we find that her participation in that campaign gave a great visibility to environmental leaders, helped position what they are trying to do, the issues they face, and the problems they face in doing this work in a country like Colombia. We believe that her image, we believe that her coming to be vice president was able to show that the work of these leaders makes it possible for local leaders to reach national decision-making positions, such as the vice presidency of the country. So it has been very inspiring for so many people who live in the different regions to see that it is possible for the very difficult and tough work they do in their regions can lead them to occupy major decision-making positions. Nonetheless, Colombia is experiencing a number of structural factors that have ended up producing violence. She is an Afro-Colombian leader and who has been attacked, and we've needed to contain that. One thing that has happened is that many in society thought that from moment to the next, in just 4 years, it would be possible to resolve any number of factors which have been historic. And it's not easy. It's no simple thing to reach the executive, in this case, the presidency and the vice presidency, but that doesn't guarantee having all of the power in Colombia. There are many sources of power in Colombia, and one of these has been the legislature, which has not been an ally of this government, and it's not been possible to carry out several social reforms that have been part of the government program of the current administration. So her reaching this position is important, but the experience has shown that it's important to also have the support of the other areas of power in Colombia in order to be able to bring about the transformations we need. Yes, as Pilar says, Francia Márquez reaching this position has been very important in a progressive government that also seeks to position life itself as the highest value, and that the governments and the different branches of government should operate to support the most vulnerable communities. And this makes it such that her position and her reaching the vice presidency has also meant a breath of fresh air in Colombian politics. As human rights defenders, it was seen as a key achievement in those elections. In Colombia, in the current administration, a new Ministry of Equality was established, and she headed it up. And it has established some major public policies to support youth, LGBTQ plus communities, but also issues related to fighting poverty, which is fundamental for understanding what is happening in Colombia and also for the defense of human rights, which is not just from the different sectors, but also in terms of environmental work. Francia has always talked about the importance of poverty and racism as things that we really need to change in Colombia. She, as vice president, has also played a key role in pushing the total peace policy, trying to bring peace in all the different regions of the country, and also highlighting the agendas of the Afro-Colombian cause in the Cauca, in the Pacific Coast region, and other areas of Colombia, which continue to be crucial for being able to bring about change in Colombia. There are also key roles that she has played in international politics, seeking to have greater recognition of the Afro-descendant population, as well as the indigenous population. This is key when we talk about defending the environment, the land, the territory. We need to really recognize all the different groups of the population that wage that struggle. As Pilar says, the challenges that the vice president has faced as the government is in its final months has been very tough, particularly when it comes to trying to have higher budget execution in the Ministry of Equality and seeking to give greater visibility to the agendas of the social movement from the perspective of how the Colombian state and the Colombian government need to respond to the demands put forward by the communities, especially the Afro-Indigenous and peasant communities in the rural areas, their demands to the Colombian state to improve the dramatic situation that they've been experiencing.
A lot of what Astrid and Pilar have mentioned here is very consistent with our last conversation with Alberto Yepes when it comes to Colombian human rights. And that consensus is that this institutional corruption that we have discussed is not going to change overnight, so long as the institutional structure of corruption that has plagued Colombia all under the lens of war on drugs, quote unquote, is not going to change overnight again, because there is money to be made in exploitation, in intimidation, in torture, and in murder of activists. And we've seen that time and time again in Colombia, and it's not something that is going to change once again overnight. Now, going back to Putumayo, as I mentioned earlier, Pilar, as an example of the work that Minga does to protect the environment, can you tell us about a possible mining project in Mocoa and how it threatens human life? And actually, before getting into details, can you tell us about where Mocoa is in Colombia?
Bueno, efectivamente, nosotros desde hace mucho tiempo trabajamos.
Yes, in effect, for a long time, we have worked to protect the environment, and a part of our work is focused in the Department of Putumayo. Putumayo is a department or province situated in the south of Colombia. It is one of the regions that includes the Amazon biome, and the capital of Putumayo is Mocoa. And it is right there that an effort is being made by Libero Copper, known in Colombia as Libero Cobre, has a potential project. They want to extract copper from the mountains in the region. Nonetheless, we have been engaged in a campaign. One of these is called Not Everything That Shines Is Copper, because we want to show that the negative impacts in regions such as this have a dramatic and drastic negative impact, not only on the culture of indigenous peoples, but also the very life and integrity of a large part of the population that lives there. This multinational seeking to mine copper, well, to do so, it would have a huge environmental impact, destroying mountains, and in so doing, having other irreversible negative impacts on the environment. The local population, particularly indigenous peoples, have a motto, which is that there should be peace in the mountains, and the copper should be left quietly inside those mountains. All of this to indicate that mining copper could result in avalanches in that area. A few years ago, in Mocoa, there was a major avalanche that took the lives of almost 400 people. And they want to do this work in areas that are geologically unstable. The negative impacts would also be on water sources, as well as the spiritual cosmovision of the indigenous peoples who live there. And for us, it's important that that cosmovision, that spiritual cosmovision of the indigenous peoples be understood. It is raising Mother Earth, or the Pachamama, as they call it. It is destroying a whole cultural area. So, from Minga, we have tried to accompany legal actions so that the judges can order the cessation of any issuance of mining titles. Right now, there is a lawsuit that has been filed seeking to bring a halt to the mining work, to seeing to it that license such as that not be issued for exploitation of the Amazon region, but and also here in the meetings we've had, we're trying to raise awareness that what goes on in the Amazon affects not only Putumayo, not only Mocoa, but it affects all of humankind. The Amazonian biome is the largest lung that humankind has. So we need to break down indifference and note that what these multinationals are doing could have repercussions in the form of irreversible harm for all of humanity.
And as an example of this harm that you just mentioned, for the American audience, 2025 is the 10th anniversary of the gold mine wastewater spill in Silverton, Colorado. And anyone can go on Google and look up the images of this fluorescent yellow river in Colorado 10 years ago. And the damage that was caused by this gold mine leak has still not entirely been recovered or cleaned up since then. Now, imagine that happening in the Amazon region south in Colombia. These are the challenges that environmental activists in Colombia are trying to prevent. And the people standing in the way are these very same companies that set these tragic environmental set of events in motion. And so with that said, we're going to take a break right here. We're speaking with Astrid Torres, who's the director of the Somos Defensores program based in Colombia, and Pilar Castillo, who's the director of Asociación Minga, also based in Colombia. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in occupied Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned. Los Destellos, and you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in occupied Washington. Reminding everyone, you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, we're speaking about environmental human rights in Colombia with Astrid Torres, who's the director of the Somos Defensores program based in Colombia, and Pilar Castillo, the director of Asociación Minga, also based in Colombia. So since the focus of today's conversation is on the environment, let's remember that there is money to be made from Colombia's natural resources, communities to be exploited by multinational companies, environments to be destroyed by mining and industry, and activists to be assaulted or killed if they get in the way. Perhaps there is no better example of this than in the summer last year when a U.S. jury in Miami found banana giant Chiquita Brands International liable for the deaths of Colombian civilians due to its financing of the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, or the AUC, its acronym, which was a brutal paramilitary death squad. So my question here is to both Astrid and Bilar. In this landmark ruling, in the fight for human rights, does this case serve as an example or at the very least a frame of reference to the work that you do for an American audience to understand?
Sí, claro que sí. Esta sentencia marca un precedente.
Yes, of course. This decision is a very important precedent. It shows that it's not enough to say that a company like that operated out of because it was being coerced or because they needed to seek protection. The jury concluded that the company knew what it was doing. They knew that they were sponsoring illegal groups, and it's fundamental that that's been recognized. I'd also like to highlight the struggle of those who for years were able to accompany this process. And I think it also shows that the effects of the operations of these multinationals in Colombia transcend the economic aspect, because their illegal activity in this case, illegal as they were sponsoring paramilitary groups who committed so many human rights violations, had a negative impact on entire lives, entire communities, and showed what has been denounced historically, which is to say the links between multinationals and armed groups to guarantee that they would give them security. But this security ends up doing away with the lives and the integrity of many people who in our cases are defenders of the environment and who oppose the harms that these companies want to do in our country. This decision is an important precedent, very important, so that communities can demand the need for transparency when it comes to the relationships of businesses with local actors. And it is striking for it to suggest that Colombia needs to regulate and observe the role played by these multinationals. They have economic power, and that economic power has enabled them to, in turn, buy silence, by justice, by licenses, so that they can do as they wish with so many things running counter to the rights of the communities, cultural rights, and rights to people's territories. We have asked that the countries of the world also demand of their companies a commitment to respect human rights. We are asking that licenses not be issued that have a negative impact on the territory of the Amazon basin, that there should be a binding treaty demanding that any action by companies include respect for human rights at all times. So, for those who are not so familiar with these issues, let me reiterate, this is a struggle that goes back many years to show that a company like Chiquita paid paramilitaries to protect them, but what that money did was to cause the deaths of many people in Colombia. So these are money, this is money that is stained by blood and pain, and that has brought about the deaths of many leaders. Nonetheless, I would highlight the resistance of many social organizations, as well as the group of lawyers who accompany these communities that have made it possible for the truth, despite the power of the companies, to emerge, and for that judgment to be handed down. And let me reiterate, it is very important politically because of the huge power that this multinational company had. Yes, the Chiquita case with the judgment here, judgment of liability, but also in Colombia, shows that the victims were right, and the human rights organizations who began denouncing the relationship between these companies, private security agencies and public security forces of Colombia as of the 1990s, well, it showed that this was not that the communities were telling any lies, but rather that they sought to exterminate any number of community leaders, trade union leaders, progressive politicians who denounced these situations and this collusion in the Urabá region of Antioquia. And it is historic, as Pilar has said, because it makes it possible, the decision in Florida, because it makes it possible for us human rights organizations in Colombia. Well, that we're right when we say that there needs to be greater monitoring of companies that operate with huge projects in areas where there's a lot of conflict, in areas where there are serious human rights violations as well as violations of international humanitarian law, because we need to oversee the activities of the companies as well as the police and military forces in these regions, which the communities have often denounced for attacking members of the local population and those who defend rights, particularly those who oppose mega projects. So we insist that there be clear regulation of the activities of companies in our different regions. This is a way to prevent future human rights violations, attacks on the communities, and it's a way to keep to prevent the repetition of what happened in Colombia at the hands of Chiquita Brands.
We did an entire show in the summer of last year on this historic ruling against Chiquita Brands and their actions in Colombia. And what's infuriating about this story is in three parts. One, as Astrid mentioned, that there are other companies like Chiquita in Colombia and in South America, for that matter, that have done these sort of deals with paramilitary groups as a means to silence environmental activists. Number two, there are other companies, as mentioned, is that Nestle, for example, in neighboring Brazil, have also been accused of doing the same thing as Chiquita Brands as a means to protect their control of production of coffee and chocolate in that country. And the other thing is that companies like these, for generations now, have been cozy with various right-wing governments over the years in Colombia. And that lends itself to the institutional corruption that we mentioned in the first half of the show that, again, is not going to change overnight. And finally, it's another sad chapter to the Chiquita brand, which is also the United Fruit Company, that has been doing this sort of wheeling and dealing against activists with cozy right-wing governments for generations now, not just in Colombia, but in other parts of Latin America as well. Guatemala comes to mind in the 1950s. So am I right in making that conclusion and that assessment that there are other factors like these that need to be addressed? And are these things that I just mentioned also play a role, at the very least, a frame of reference in the work that you do?
Sí, claro que
Yes, of course. In particular, I agree with your assessment. In effect, there are many different powers behind all of this. There are interests which, unfortunately, also have been supported by those who hold power, political power, as well as economic and business power, whose work has had so many negative impacts, and these alliances with mafia-type interests, groups that continue destroying everything that comes in their way. I think that the challenge is to continue resisting, to continue protecting leaders who lodge such denunciations. And from Colombia, we need to continue supporting all of the social movements which, despite fear, despite the threats, despite the fact that groups are put in place to go after and threaten them, they continue taking action to denounce influence the situation nationally and internationally. And what's happened in Colombia should be an example to make an appeal to the different countries. This is a responsibility of everyone. So long as the countries allow their companies to come in and for the business powers to continue to have ties with the mafia, so long as the politicians continue to be servile to corruption, we're not going to be able to solve anything. So I think these are is a very interesting analysis. As you mentioned, it's not just been Colombia, it's happened in other countries as well. And the appeal is that we need to raise our voices to oppose corruption and to oppose these economic interests that destroy lives, that destroy nature, and that destroy, indeed, the very social fabric of our communities. But I insist, Colombia is an example of resistance and of struggle, and we need to continue in this work, and we're grateful for opportunities such as this, to be able to reach a different public where we can help others get to know these situations and break down the indifference about what's happening in our countries. Yes, what you say is true, and I think it does reflect what's happened consistently in Latin America when environmental leaders who defend the land and territories lodge complaints against companies such as AngloGold or that are involved in pushing mining projects or hydroelectric projects. They violate the territories. They undermine the communities. Indeed, they pervert the institutions so as to favor megaprojects against the desires and decisions of communities that don't want to have megaprojects in their communities. And this, there's a major dispute in Latin America today. One sign of this is that in Colombia, we have approximately 160 socio-environmental conflicts, and those conflicts are there because mining companies, hydroelectric companies, as well as companies in other sectors of the economy and the extractivist sectors, and communities struggle for this to not happen. But we have shown, for example, how the companies try to use the judiciary to criminalize those who protest against their mega projects. One example of this is in Antioquia, a department in Colombia, where Medellin is the capital city, where any number of peasant farmers are opposing a huge mining mega project being carried out by AngloGold. And the Office of the Attorney General is going after the community leaders, trying to criminalize them, because there's a company behind this effort to try to break down citizen resistance and have no community opposition to their project. So we need to not only look at the relationship between the companies and criminal actors, but also the use of the judiciary in Latin America. It's a common pattern vis-a-vis the work of defense of rights, particularly in the case of environmentalists. We need to continue raising our voices, carrying out investigations, and denouncing the situation. So in Colombia, we have demanded that there be more investigations in the transitional justice system, where some of the paramilitary groups have talked about their own ties with companies to have projects go forward in different territories. And if the investigations don't go forward, then there will be impunity, which allows the reproduction of such conduct involving violation of human rights, where the Colombian state, whether civilian authorities or police and military authorities, have supported these practices that have been harmful and very serious vis-a-vis the rights of our communities.
Astrid, I want to address something that may not be directly at first glance having to do with Colombian human rights as it pertains to the environment. But as you know, there is growing escalation of military force by the U.S. towards Venezuela. We've done shows here with Venezuelan voices about this escalating tension. And just last week, we actually did a show on the point of view of Trinidad and Tobago with these escalating tensions. Now, both Venezuela and Trinidad and Tobago have their respective oil industries, and that's one of the main components of this escalating tensions. Colombia, as we've discussed already, has its own natural resources. Not exactly oil, but other equally important natural resources throughout the region. And so while this may not have anything to do with human rights at first glance, one thing is clear. It does have a lot to do with what we've discussed during the course of this conversation, which is private control, private seizure, and private profit of public resources. So am I correct in making this assessment? Because, well, again, it may not have anything to do with your work directly. It certainly does not help either in the process.
As we were saying a moment ago, our being here, Pilar, on behalf of Asociación Ming and myself, on behalf of Somos Defensores, has had a central message. We have insisted that the current tensions in the waters of the Caribbean and the Pacific by our countries, especially next to by the coasts of Venezuela, is a matter of concern for us because it does have to do with human rights. It does have to do with the need in this very difficult moment to lift up first respect for the Human Rights Charter, for the autonomy and sovereignty of our territories, of our countries. That is fundamental. Third, we have pointed out the importance of the international human rights system, speaking up decisively about the need for policies to defend life. And we pointed this out because we in Latin America have had a lengthy history of colonization by the countries of the North, not just the United States, but also Europe. And this has historically brought us serious problems of violence, inequality, exclusion, racism, which we as social movements have sought to change in any number of ways. And at this time, we are urging and trying to have the international system work, protect the territories, protect the populations and the communities, because there's nothing that justifies military attacks or the presence of such a large-scale military presence, such as the arrival of this U.S. aircraft carrier to Caribbean waters with more than 15,000 U.S. forces that just add to the tensions. And this can only be worked out if the international system demands respect for human rights. And here, clearly, we have to issue an appeal to the government of the United States to respect Latin America as autonomous countries. We need to be capable of changing our countries in dealing with the major difficulties we face, but as autonomous countries. I think that the key here is respect for sovereignty and international human rights, and also the community of Latin American and Caribbean nations and the European Union recently met in Colombia, and they issued a firm appeal calling for respect among nations.
So one of the main components of having this show on WPFW is to educate the diaspora here of their parents or grandparents' respective country. And Colombia has one of the largest diasporas here in the United States from South America. And so to end this program, I want to give 2 minutes to each of you an opportunity to let the Colombian diaspora here in the U.S. know what they can do to try to learn more about the struggle for environmental rights, human rights, and social justice. Because one of the reasons why there is a large Colombian diaspora here in the U.S. is because of the displacement and the harassment and the threats of murder that we discussed during the course of this conversation. So what do you tell those here in the U.S., the diaspora, the Colombian diaspora, what do you want to tell them as far as how they can learn more about the work that you do.
En este viaje creo que ha sido muy interesante que en los diferentes espacios.
On this visit, it's been very interesting that in the different activities we've had, there have been many people who are part of the Colombian diaspora. We think it's key that civil society take interest in that, even though they're living in a country that is not their own, that they can be aware of all of the things that they can do. We think that working with places such as, well, here there's a very interesting experience, the experience of the Colombia Human Rights Committee, which has invited us to come here and which has been a key ally in our work for the defense of human rights in Colombia. And this is an opportunity to highlight that without the support, for example, of these Colombians who came together, as well as people from the United States, they've come together in light of what we've been going through in Colombia, and they've extended their hand for many years so that we could bring actions, for example, before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. We wanted to get not only to the U.S. government, but also academia to reach them. We wanted to reach students, knowing that we can all pool our efforts. How? By coordinating with one another, creating groups in a network to support Colombia, writing letters, putting out information when it gets here, and making sure that the information goes beyond the niche group that is of most interest, or that is already interested, but to go beyond that. We can issue that way an appeal from civil society to the U.S. government to respect human rights. I think that our key message is that we cannot stay silent when there are clear human rights violations. No country, however much it's a world power, can justify the assassination of persons who are in a defenseless position. One cannot justify the violation of other countries' sovereignty. One cannot justify the indiscriminate action of attacks against human rights defenders and environmental defenders, everything we've been discussing. So our appeal is that the diaspora can be very strong. We need to overcome indifference and take interest in what continues happening, particularly in our case, the situation in Colombia. Let me reiterate, there are marvelous examples of what coming together in this country can mean when it comes to having an impact to help solve problems in Colombia. So also we're grateful when people come together and take interest in listening to a program such as this, getting this view from civil society, and it can have a trickle-down effect so that it could, they could share these concerns with their families in their workplaces. We've come not only to speak of a context, but to say we can do a great deal, we can weave together networks, and together we can try to, little by little, resolve so many conflicts in Colombia and in the world. Yes, I think we can recognize the great work done, for example, by Colombia Human Rights Committee, and one can also work with people in the Colombian diaspora, many of whom have been victims. Many have had to leave Colombia because their rights are not guaranteed there or because they were in danger. This is something we recognize as a very important matter. We recognize the great value of the work of continuing to struggle here in the United States, but also in other parts of the world, in light of what's happening in Colombia. Continue talking about what's happening in Colombia and pool efforts to help bring about the changes that we need. We need peace, more democracy, and all of this makes us in Colombia feel that we have allies in many parts of the world. And that is something that we always seek to acknowledge when we carry out these advocacy tours. Their work and the work that's been done in the United States has been crucial for the Colombian agenda to not disappear, in so that it can continue in many areas of political advocacy, looking at the without the work of the diaspora and of these different committees, it would be impossible to continue this level of advocacy. So we need to continue strengthening it. And I think with that, we can continue to strengthen the work that we human rights defenders do in Colombia. That is why we continue inviting everyone to join the different groups and the different activities on Colombia, the different coalitions and organizations, disseminating them through social networks, because the only way to take on the challenges that we face in Colombia, Latin America, and the whole world today, because all of this has to do with society in general, upholding human rights, the need to have democratic governments that protect life. This brings us together in any number of actions.
We've been speaking with Astrid Torres, who's the director of the Somos Defensores program based in Colombia, and Pilar Castillo, who's the director of Asociación Minga, also based in Colombia. So keep up the great work. We appreciate your time and also your conviction in doing this incredibly tough and dangerous work. So thank you very much once again, Astrid Torres and Pilar Castillo, for being on the show with us. And also Charlie Roberts for interpreting this conversation with us. Charlie Roberts is part of the Colombia Human Rights Committee. Charlie, thank you very much for the tremendous work that you did during the course of this conversation.
Of course, it's a pleasure as always.
Absolutely. And with that said, that is it for today's show. We want to remind everyone you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much, everyone, for being on the show. That's it for today's show. Adios.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Friday, November 14th. Here are some headlines. President Trump announced today that he will ask U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi to investigate Jeffrey Epstein's involvement with former President Bill Clinton and other prominent Democrats and financial institutions. It's another attempt by Trump to redirect scrutiny from his own connections to the convicted sex offenders by focusing on his political opponents. After yesterday's release of emails suggesting that Trump was aware that Epstein was trafficking young girls, he immediately claimed the emails were selectively leaked by Democrats to create a false narrative. Meanwhile, the House is expected to vote on a bill next week demanding that the Justice Department disclose all of its files related to Epstein. 4 Republicans have already said they will vote in favor of the resolution. In other news, the only remaining criminal case against President Trump is now in the hands of a new prosecutor. In 2023, a grand jury in Atlanta indicted Trump and 18 others on state racketeering charges for their efforts to overturn his 2020 electoral defeat in Georgia. The charges include Trump's now famous call to the Georgia Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, a fellow Republican, urging him to help find enough votes to beat Biden. The case was put on hold after Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis was disqualified from leading the prosecution over the, quote, appearance of impropriety, close quote. Today, Republican Peter Skandalakis, a Republican and the executive director of the Prosecuting Attorneys Council of Georgia, announced he will take over the case. In that role, he could proceed on the charges laid out by Willis, proceed on only some of the charges, or dismiss the case entirely. It is unlikely that any action against Donald Trump could proceed while he is the sitting president. In related news, a unanimous Nevada Supreme Court reinstated criminal charges against six people who were allegedly involved in President Trump's 2020 fake elector scheme. The case had previously been dismissed on grounds that it had been filed in the wrong county. The decision follows Trump's mostly symbolic pardon of 77 people who backed the plan to subvert the 2020 election results. However, a presidential pardon has no power over state charges like those in Nevada. And in other news, with the government shutdown over, here's WPFW's Noah Portner to tell you about ongoing controversy in the funding bill that was approved.
The government shutdown has ended, meaning that hundreds of thousands of furloughed employees showed up to work yesterday, and essential government services like SNAP will resume quickly. Other effects of the shutdown, like air travel, will take time to adjust, with over 1,000 canceled flights yesterday. The funding bill advanced quickly after picking up the necessary Democrat senators, but there is a controversial measure in the bill revolving around the Justice Department. It allows senators whose records were searched in connection to January 6th to sue the federal government for $500,000. This measure was added last minute by leadership, leading to complaints from Democratic and Republican senators. Eight senators had their phone records subpoenaed as part of the January 6th investigation under Biden, although most of these senators were not even aware of this specific measure until it was being included. This measure is meant to protect against the Justice Department harassing and subpoenaing members of Congress in the future, but the eight senators eligible to sue are all Republicans.